Hi, in this podcast, we're going to look at the concept of reaction time, which is part of the information processing area along the Fed 1 AQA syllabus. As you probably appreciate, reaction time, very useful in sport, and I think most sports commentators would appreciate the value of having quick reactions. You've got more time to choose your options. You've got more time to play the shot. But quite often, the definitions of reaction time and response time are confused, and commentators sometimes get them wrong. So the starting point for our little podcast is to look at some definitions of reaction time, movement time, response time, and indeed the relationship between them. But if we start by saying that reaction time is defined as the onset of the stimulus to the onset of the response. There is, in fact, no movement in your reaction time. It's the time you take to process and interpret information. Your movement time is defined as the start to the completion of the task. Movement time is the physical action. Response time is defined as the onset of the stimulus to the completion of the task. In other words, if we put those definitions together, your response time is equal to reaction time plus movement time. Okay, let's see if we can explain those concepts a little bit further and look at an example. And the example we give comes from a 100-meter sprint. Reaction time here would be from the onset of stimulus to the onset of response. In other words, it's the time for the athlete to hear, pick up the signal of the gun to the point where they are just about to leave the blocks. There's no movement, they pick up the signal, bang, gone. The movement time is the time from when they actually leave the blocks, when they push off, until they hit the finish line. The total response for the 100-meter sprint would therefore be from the onset of the stimulus, in other words, from hearing the gun, until the completion of the task, and from the point when you hit the tape at the end of the sprint. And if we put those two together, your response time is equal to the fraction of a second it takes you to hear the gun and push off the blocks, plus the amount of time it takes you to leave the blocks and hit the tape. Your response time is the sum of reaction and movement time. I'll put that in a different context for you. If you were catching a ball, your reaction time would be from the time you picked up the flight of the ball in the air using your senses and you just about ready to take that first step to where you've anticipated or thought the ball is going to land. You're not moved yet. You just picked up the flight of the ball. Your reaction time has no particular movement. The movement time is to when you take that first step, get underneath the ball and make the catch. It's clutched safely in your hands. We put those together and response time would be from seeing the flight of the ball until you make the catch. In other words, again, response is equal to reaction plus movement time. Okay, next part, we're going to look at some things, a whole host of things that affect your reaction time. And of course, because they affect your reaction time, they're going to affect your response time. Because reaction time is, of course, an integral part of that response, as we've just seen. And the first thing concerns the number of choices. Now, we've just looked at 100-meter sprint a few moments ago. A 100-meter sprint is an example of a simple reaction time because it's kind of one choice, one option. A choice reaction time has a number of options, rather like the midfield player in football would have a number of players from which he or she could choose to make the pass. Now, the simple rule is the more choices we have, the slower we react. But the relationship between the choice that we have and reaction time isn't a kind of uniform one. To understand Hicks' law, what actually happens is the more choices we have, yes, we do become slower, our reaction time increases, but the rate at which our reaction time increases, the rate at which we get slower, actually gets less with more choice. In other words, if we have one, two, perhaps going to three choices, there'd be quite a difference in real terms of our reaction time. If we've got seven, eight, nine choices, there'd be less of an increase in our reaction time, probably because we've become more familiar with the situation. So that's Hicks' law. It explains the fact that the more choice we have, the slower we're going to be. Simple reaction time, one option, one choice. Choice reaction time, a number of responses. There are other things that affect our reaction time. They include age. Unfortunately, the older you get, the slower you're going to be. Perhaps that is slightly compensated for by another factor, your experience. Indeed, experienced players will actually react more quickly than less experienced ones. If ever you've had the unfortunate experience to play squash against a very experienced player and you found yourself chasing into the corners whilst he or she is in the middle carefully selecting their shots, seemingly knowing where the ball is going to bounce, then you probably know what we mean. Your reaction time too can also be affected by gender. Studies have indicated that men do react faster than women, but studies have also indicated that as we increase in age, females tend to retain their ability to react for a lengthier period than men do. The intensity of the stimulus is important too. We do tend to react more quickly to a stimulus that's loud, that's bright, that stands out. Those of you who've ever watched floodlit cricket will notice that instead of playing with a dark cricket ball, you play with a bright, luminous green one to make sure you can pick it up earlier from the background. And your reaction time too can be affected by your level of fitness. Dead simple, the fitter you are, the faster you'll be. So make sure you work on it. Okay. There are other things that affect your reaction time. And the next few little theories are kind of related. The first one is called the single channel hypothesis. And it's indicated by that little Y shape you can perhaps see on the slide there. And the single hypothesis says only one stimulus can be processed at any one time. Therefore, a second stimulus has to wait for the first one to be finished. That's the rule, dead simple, single channel hypothesis. We can only process one stimulus at once. A second stimulus, ready to be processed, has to wait for the first one. And perhaps that gives us some indication as to why the more choices we have, the slower we may well be. Now, the single channel hypothesis links very nicely into the next little theory, which is called the psychological refractory period. We've just told you that if you've got to process a second stimulus, it's got to wait for the first one. Well, what if that second stimulus, that's the one you want? That's the important one. And that could happen in sport. And if a second stimulus is presented to you, and this is the key, before you've processed the first, there's an unavoidable delay. And that delay is called the psychological refractory period. Let's see if we can put this into an example or two. The commonly used example is playing tennis. You're at the net, you're going to do a forehand volley. Ball coming towards you is the stimulus, the volley is the response. You don't make that volley because the ball hits the net. And that's the key to the POP. You don't actually make the initial response because a second stimulus is presented to you before you've done that. The ball's at the net. You've had no chance to volley. That deflection from the net needs now to be processed. It's a second stimulus. And there's a delay. And that delay occurs when that second stimulus is presented until perhaps what would have been your initial response. And that delay is unavoidable. It's going to cause you to slow down a little bit. Okay? And then once you process the second stimulus, the deflection, you may be able to try and respond to it. And sometimes, yeah, you can make it. Unfortunately, sometimes that deflection beats you. Talking of deflections, what if you're a goalkeeper in football or hockey? Somebody makes a shot, you go into your right to save, it hits a defender, it deflects to the left, you're stuck. You dive right, you go to your right, deflection's happened, you can't recover. Okay? The psychological refractory period has beaten you in that sense. Okay, so those are some of the things that affect your reaction time. And in any exam answer that you make, talk about things like gender, fitness, stimulus intensity, okay? Your experience, your age, your gender. Talk about the single channel hypothesis and the theory of the psychological refractory period. You could also mention the factor of drugs and alcohol, sometimes used in the exam, and easily put, if you take performance-enhancing drugs such as steroids, you will react faster. There are other, perhaps, uncalled for and negative consequences of doing that, so it's not really recommended. Okay, final piece of our look at reaction time asks us to give reasons to suggest how we can improve our reaction time. If you think of the factors that cause it, the factors that affect it, such as fitness, therefore the first way to improve our reaction time, get fitter. Why don't we also get some information on our opponent before we play? By doing that, it might enable us to anticipate. More about that in a moment. Why don't we look for some cues as to our opponent? The way they're gripping their racket in badminton or tennis, the way they're standing to shape up to make that serve. If we can get some clues as to what they're going to do, we might be able to anticipate and improve our reaction time. We can also improve our reaction time by learning to concentrate and really focus on the task. You may well look at the Olympics, which is coming up as we do the podcast in 2012. Look how much concentration is etched on the faces of those athletes on the starting blocks as they focus down the track. A process of mental rehearsal, going through the sequence of movements that you're about to make in your mind without actual physical movement, that can improve your reaction time. You can indeed train the brain. You can also improve your reaction time by making the stimulus intense, making it loud and bright. If you highlight the stimulus, you're more likely to react to it. And finally, anticipation. We've mentioned it before. Yes, anticipation will improve your reaction time, but it's a gamble. If you anticipate correctly, your reaction time will be improved. Unfortunately, if you anticipate incorrectly, your reaction time can actually be increased in perhaps the same way that the PRP would affect you, because you're kind of judging a stimulus when you anticipate. And if your judgment is incorrect, you judge that stimulus, if you like, before it's happened. So if you're right, you're very quick. If you're wrong, I'm afraid that the principles of the PRP will come into play and there will be a delay. To help you anticipate, you can perhaps look at two things. There is spatial anticipation, and that simply looks at where. And there is temporal anticipation, and that kind of looks at when. So to judge the flight of a ball in that catch example, you would judge two things. You would judge where you think it's going to land, spatial, and you will judge when you think that ball is going to land in your vicinity. That's temporal. Those two ways can help you to anticipate. Okay, that concludes what we have to say on reaction time. I hope you found the podcast useful.